There were some Sophistos from the TV studios around the corner, laughing and gavreeting. The Devotchka was smecking away and not caring about the wicked world one bit. Then the disc on the stereo twanged off and out, and in the short silence before the next one came on, she suddenly came with a burst of singing.
Maiden with Phantom of the Opera, revving it up, revving the energy up, man.
Phantom of the Crowd,
letting you know, putting it down. And for my old school crew,
Lloyd Webber should give fucking Phantom what's it called? Iron Maiden a call and ask for some damages.
Well, the damage is done, man. No, and for my old school crew, I've just got one word to say: Lucozade. They'll know what I'm chatting about. Wow. This is trying to sound intelligent.
Wow, we're definitely going to
Yeah, man. We're going to go at it.
Trying to sound intelligent. I'm Joshua.
I am Mr. G. And we have got the amazing guest after much trials and tribulations in order to try and bring him down here.
Trials and tribulations.
Definitely so.
Yeah, it's been a week. We've tried to get it down for a long time, innit?
Yeah.
That was that one time.
Can I just at least introduce you, right? We start chatting breeze. Yeah. You know what I mean? Jesus Christ. Right, no, it's not Jesus Christ, actually. We have got the next best thing, Caleb Fermi.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm cool. I'm hot. Cool in the colloquial term.
Okay, yeah. Well, you didn't have to translate that. I'm not that old. Yeah. I'm not fucking. I'm not Doc Brown from Back to the Future.
At least Doc Brown got to go to the future. I don't know about your chances.
I'm going to the future. Mm. I was in the past just a minute ago. Physically, I was in the past a minute ago, and now I'm in the future.
No, you're in the present. Whether you make it to the future is another thing.
No, I'm always in the future.
No, you're always in the present.
No. You're in the present.
You are always in the present.
You're in the present, my friend. Constantly decaying.
Anyway,
right? Like fucking sunlight when it hits Dracula, right? But me, I'm just rising up. Man,
we hope.
Yeah. Right, okay then. Yes. Caleb, thank you very, very much for coming down. Yeah. I must say, like, that usually when we do the chill pill nights, we have huge arguments, right? So it's myself, it's Raymond, it's Simon, it's Deanna, it's Adam, right?
Yeah.
And usually when we decide to have an artist, to book an artist, we argue about it, because like one person will want this person, another person want that person, and I didn't want Josh. Josh has come to every chill pill we've done, like all our incarnations from the first moment we had him, right?
This is an outright lie.
No, you've done the Screen Bar, you've done the Soho, and you've done the Albany.
I haven't done the Small Bar. I haven't done Soho, actually.
You did fucking...
No, I haven't.
Oh, you didn't?
I haven't. That was Musa, my shadow.
Oh shit. I've done that awful thing that white people do.
Yes, you
where
have.
They mistake yes, you have. One yeah. Negro yes, for another. Have. Well, this shit's getting scratched. Anyway. No, but Josh, I will say, Josh, for all his faults, which are too many to list in this podcast.
Very Boris Johnson size list.
I do rate you as a performer. I think that your performance at our Chill Pill is probably one of the best performances, even though he cussed our whole crew. He went on stage and cussed the whole crew. I had to do some damage on him that day, right?
You have to pay me before I even perform.
Yeah. And I still have to pay him. I had to fucking pay him. No, but he really raised the roof, right? But going back to what I was saying, we usually have arguments as to who we should have and who we shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. But the minute your name got raised, Caleb, it was like, yeah, we all agreed. And it's very, very rare for us to actually have an artist that hasn't been around for that long, because usually we kind of like...
He's like, got no scene. He has no people. Right. I don't know of his fan base. What's his SoundCloud
Who
like?
Who is this mysterious man?
Has he got a Spotify? Is he a YouTube port? Has he been picked up on BBC?
exactly. But just on... All of us had seen you in different places, and we'd all say, oh man, there's this dude. And I don't think I even knew your name, right? Because I remember I met you at Yomi's birthday.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I went up to you and I said, yeah. Oh man, that fucking shit was sick, right? And then I was asking Deanna, and Deanna goes, oh yeah, that's kind of, oh shit, man. So I really got to congratulate you, especially on the essence of your work, the essence of what you work and what you're doing. And you probably can't see it yourself, but you are...
Oh, he can see it.
I can't see it.
No. He can't.
He's
He ain't gonna be that arrogant, right? Yeah. Not like me. I'm fucking arrogant. No, but you know, he reminds me of, and I will never say it to his face, right? But he reminds me of when I first saw Inua Ellums. Inua Ellums used to come down to our night when he was a teenager in Brixton. And when he performed, this little teenager was writing like a fucking 30-year-old with the same gravitas, the same emotion, the same self-awareness, and being able to just command. And I looked at Inua just thinking, damn, I need to get my shit together. But it's true. You see a lot of people, but there's just a few people who just go, oh, wow. And I also feel that way about Jaladi.
Yeah.
I've seen him do something with the guy Darius.
Yeah.
And I saw the two of them do something together. And I thought, wow, there's something interesting there. You know, when you're an artist and you see something, you think, I can't write that, but I'm glad someone can write that. Yeah, 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 you know? Yeah. So, yeah, no, well done. You know?
Thank you, man.
Exactly.
How's it been going for
you? Okay, now the fucking accolades out of the way, man. You know what I mean?
Let's
get
into it. You know?
Yeah. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
How's life been treating you anyway?
Yeah, it's been all right. Just quit my job.
You quit your job?
Yeah, just quit. Today was my last day.
In this Brexit economy, what are your parents going to say?
They're quite chilled out about it. It's like, yeah, see you. I'm Nigerian as well, so it's like...
That's pretty hardcore, yeah, man.
I've got them on side.
Wow, you got that Theresa May honeymoon period. When the price of Supermot goes up, man, shit starts getting serious, man. You know what I mean?
But yeah, you're part of a... Are you part of a poetry group? I think
yeah,
you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
6 fucking weeks, man.
6 weeks, man.
10,000 people in them.
Yeah, and now we're in the 6 weeks holidays.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, we're in our element right now.
You know what annoys me about 6 weeks, right? This is what really annoys me.
Are they the Wu-Tang
We've done the whole...
Yeah, the Wu-Tang one where we're talking
this
about.
This is what annoys...
6 weeks. How many members are in 6 weeks?
8 billion.
Because I used...
8 fucking billion. The entire...
One more. One more than the whole world.
Exactly. Yeah. The entire EU market. Yeah, the entire EU market is in 6 weeks of depression, right? No.
This and we're growing more.
This is what annoys me about 6 weeks, right? Is that, like, I've seen Jalade and I rate him. And I've seen Caleb and I rate him. And there's another girl, what's her name? Josette. And I rate her. Mm-hmm. And then I found out they were all in the same group. And I thought, Jesus Christ, these guys are fucking serious, man. You know what I mean? Because I saw them all independently. I didn't know they were in the same group. Right? I thought, oh, wow, man, he's good. Oh, she's good. Oh, wow, this guy's good. And then when I realized, oh, my God, you're all in the same group.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's going to keep happening to you. We've just got like 5 new people.
Again, it's the whole Wu-Tang theory. My whole theory is there's only a certain core crew that can stay together. Because there's many bumps in the road, you know?
Yeah.
There's many bumps in the road, and boy,
the numbers fluctuate, they go up and down, up and down.
Wait, does anybody ever come to you and go, I don't want to be in your group anymore?
No one ever does that. People just aren't around.
Yes, sir.
All right, then, okay, here's the thing. Since you've started up a collective, I'm in a collective called Chill Pill, right? have you ever bodied anyone?
What do you mean by
get rid
that?
Of someone?
Strategically, yes.
Wow.
All right, then. Wow. Okay, right.
No,
you're a man. You're a man. I rate that. Yeah. No, I've bodied people. Trust me, I've had to. Damn straight, man.
Wow.
Nah, there's a few folks, man. There's a few folks, right? Mm-hmm. There's one person, I'm not going to name them, but if they're listening, they know who they are. Right? And there's a case where if you don't tell this person, then they're going to get the full fucking wrath of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And boom, gone.
Okay.
Not even a shadow left, man.
So yeah, tell me your horror story, man. How did it happen?
We're quite diplomatic about it. So we have different people who have different approaches.
What kind of
I am more like you, who's just very cutthroat with it.
Yeah.
And
did they tell him, like, I want you in the group, but my friends...
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, right? This is why I'm a big fan of Dame Dash. Someone needs to be the bastard.
Yeah.
And when people hated Dame Dash, what they didn't realise was that Dame Dash soaked in all the hatred, so people thought that Jay-Z was the cool guy. And that's what's... I don't mind being the dude that people hate. I don't mind it. It don't bother me at all, man. You know, I embrace the hatred. If you don't hate me, then something's wrong with you, man.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like it's less pressure as well on me.
Like Josh here, he tries to be nice. Yeah. He tries to be all nice. He tries to be all fair, caring.
How have I managed... Let me get this right.
Don't get him nowhere.
Let me get this right. I have burned more bridges across social media than both of you combined, but I'm the one trying to be nice.
You burn bridges because you accuse people, because you've got such a high moral standard standard of people. You, if someone drops down from that moral standard, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know
that's his high horse.
What?
That's his high horse. Right? Because you've got such a high standard for people's moral behavior and the way they come across on stage and what they say in their poems, because you judge people by such a high standard, right? Anyone that falls below that, you then come down with the bloody, the wrath of Khan.
And I mean every word of it.
Exactly. Whereas me, I'm pretty cool. I don't care what you say. Nice, I don't care what you do. But if you cross me, then boy,
how can they cross you when you're so easygoing?
What? No. If you cross me, then I got a long memory, man.
Okay.
And deep pockets. You know what I mean? I'm like,
we are currently speaking from Mr. G's sniper's nest.
Yeah.
He has his 50 caliber rifle set on the window.
Trust me, man.
Yeah. So, what are your projects? What have you going on? I saw you perform a one person show, like a little snippet of one person show. Is that still happening?
Oh yeah, that was like, do you know what it is? Sometimes I want to just be able to go away and just try things for myself, but then you do that, you have a mistake where you'd like say it to the wrong person, then they pass on the news, and then someone wants to come and make you do it in front of everyone. So that was that situation. I didn't even want to do that because I just wanted to do it in my room and just test it out, because I might not even want to. Everything I'm doing right now is trial and error. I'm just testing, and I want to keep it in the room as possible.
Okay.
But that one slipped out and I had to do it.
Describe your writing process. Like, what's the best place you like to write? What's the mindset you like to get into?
Do you know what it is? I don't even know. I just write whenever I can and whenever I'm in the mood to write. So, for example, I usually write on the way to work. Okay. Or on the way
back. You ain't going to be doing that no more.
Yeah.
That's going to be a long journey to nowhere.
Yeah. Or I write if I have a like deadline someone has paid me to write. And I'm just like, those ones are usually the shit ones.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Money has the motivator.
Yeah, there's no like secret writing thing. Some people have a whole ritual. I just write whenever, really.
So how long have you been writing for? Do you always write?
When I was a teenager, I was in a grime crew. We used to like be on radio and shit. So I used
What was your crew called?
TOS.
What's that stand for?
Thugged Out Soldiers.
Thugged Out Soldiers.
Yeah. Oh, we need to find that. Are you guys on YouTube?
Yeah, there's a radio thing, but it's those old school cameras, so it's not
okay.
Here we go, right?
Who came up with the name Thugged Out Soldiers?
We were 11 when we came up with that name.
Who did? No.
It wasn't me. It was my friend.
Okay, when the person came up with the name Thugged Out Soldiers, did you all just go, yeah, that's the one, you know?
I joined the crew late.
But when I heard...
You know, you love that name.
When I heard
have you got,
the name,
have you got a tattoo of that name? Please tell me. You've got a tattoo in it.
No, I haven't. But I loved it. I loved the name. When I heard it, those that are calling themselves Thugged Out Soldiers, I was like, that's the most gangster shit
ever.
Like, soldiers and you're thugged out.
I love that. I do love that. I call it... It's like a teenage rebellion.
Yeah.
Like, I was at a family gathering and there was like my nephew was there and must be 11 or some shit like that. And he's bored. So he's just saying, this shit's so boring or whatever. Mm. And he's listening to his headphones and he's mouthing all the words. Mm. And then the words are like getting louder. And so he's just going, and then you fuck with me and I'm going to do you right now. And I'm just going, and obviously everyone's going, you know, tell him to be quiet. And I was just like, man, there's a need for that kind of like, mindless middle finger to the world. There's a need for it.
It's in youth. Anyway, what are you doing? What are your future projects?
You see what? I don't want to jump on that, right?
Hey,
it's because that goes against his moral code.
Oh,
right? You don't want to hear people just saying, fuck this, I hate you.
That is what happens when you are arrogant and ignorant at the same time, because I'm a huge fan of the first two albums of Death Grips, right? Okay. And nobody swore like Death Grips. I like Death Grips because when you talk about imagine if the internet has a voice, what would the internet say? For the first two albums of Death Grips, I think that was it. I saw this man, he was on stage, a lady came on stage and tried to dance, and he was rapping, and with one hand, completely absentmindedly, pushed her off the stage. This woman flew. When you talk about someone flying, this woman flew, and everyone, including me, were like, "Why?" You know, I'm the most feminist ally, you know, don't touch women, don't be violent, he's bigger than you are. Yeah. In the midst of
how
a crowd.
How are you a feminist ally? Was that just doesn't make sense.
No. What does a feminist ally mean?
What does it mean? It means, okay, so this is what I think.
What, he's like
think,
Britain and America?
Hold on, let me chat. Let me die before you bury me. Cheers. This is what I mean. I feel like, I believe that feminism as a space, I think as a
to, people can believe to, they can ascribe to it, but yeah. I feel like as a space, it is very, very common that a woman can say a certain thing mm-hmm. so many times, but it's only when a man says it that certain men prick up their ears and go, oh, okay, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So I feel like when you're online or you're kind of like in any kind of feminist space or any mm-hmm. kind of movement, it happens the same with kind of like Black Lives Matter. The moment black people can talk about something so many, many mm-hmm. times, but the moment a white person comes and says it. Mm-hmm. So the same way I feel like white people shouldn't then kind of go into civil rights spaces and be like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm a civil rights leader, and they get all of the accolades and they get all the support and they get all of the opportunities,
Oscars.
And they get all of the Oscars and whatever. Yeah. I feel like men shouldn't then kind of go into like spaces where women are striving and are coming up with great articles and these great speeches and these mm-hmm. great kind of ways to convert people and then just essentially parrot what you're saying.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm a feminist.
Well, you know, I'm a feminist. Oh, great. Bravo, bravo,
okay,
black
then.
Man. My wife had a chat with me about, I said, I noticed how a few black feminists I know mm-hmm. have dated a lot of white, not that I have no problem with interracial, my wife was mixed race. Mm-hmm. It was just something I noticed, and we had a bit of a chat about it, and she made mention of the fact that, you know, maybe it could be that a lot of black feminists have very, very first-hand experience with the way black men might be into social or civil rights, mm-hmm. but when it comes to feminism, they have a very, very backward view. And I mm-hmm. understand that because mm-hmm. as a black man who comes
from, maybe they just like white men. Why politicize it?
That could also be something as well in there.
I've never thought about that.
Well, it's a lot more than that.
Why have to make a justification for your choice of partner? If they just like a white dude, they like a white dude.
That was my argument. But also, I can see her point of view because I feel it's not just black and white.
Yeah.
It's not just kind of like, oh.
Oh, it's
like,
not black and white, is it, Josh?
No.
This ain't the Josh I know. Someone else come around to my way of thinking.
You don't know me that way. Anyway, you've got a song for us, haven't you?
Yes, I have actually.
It was fucked up.
YouTube 7.
That's all this, man.
He just wanted to make fun of you.
Well,
gotta get them cola bottles. What's
your song?
What's my song?
No, where? the song you're suggesting.
Okay, do you know what? Okay, I should just say the song, but I just want to say that I was in two minds.
Yeah.
I wanted to suggest a song by 6ix7ine, which is like a young. Well, they're essentially a gang from Brixton.
Yeah.
Because they are that very fucked out soldiers-esque type of music. But they're really interesting and I wanted to segue it into like talking about other stuff. But on the way here, I was listening to Michael Kinawuka's album and Love and Hate. I had a big problem with him because a lot of people used to say we look alike and that and that. And then I started listening to him.
Maybe photo-wise, but in real life,
No. In real life, we don't. Yeah. But photo-wise, it's a bit... But yeah, I think Love and Hate, that song, is just must. It's like
he's an amazing performer. I can't like... I've seen him perform at One Taste a long time. That's the first time I ever saw him perform. And it was like... There was that... I don't know, there was that weird acoustic guitar singing movement that came that almost... Cut through all the bullshit.
Yeah. Very kind of very soft, very evocative.
Yeah. Not something that I would generally like.
Oh, good thing you phrased that because I was about to cut you down. So
it's not something that I would generally like. I mean, just maybe listening to it playing on my headphones, I probably wouldn't like it. But the way in which it captures the live space, going back to what you were saying about Hyde the Coyote, where sometimes when you're in a live space, mm-hmm. it's like very, very soulful, man. I was like, when I saw him perform, I didn't think I could feel something like that again.
Towards Afropunk. He was just like, amazing. This is Love and Hate by Michael Kinawuka.
You can't take me down. can't break me down. You can't take me down. Sometimes I get this feeling makes me hesitate. I believe she won't take me somewhere I'm not supposed to be. You can't steal the things that God has given me. No more pain and no more shame and misery. You can't take me down. You can't break me down. You can't take me down. You can't break me down. You can't take me down. You can't break me down.
And that was Love and Hate by Michael Kamen.
Man, that was a great tune.
A wonderful tune. Yeah. None of us are going to
cuss. I can't cuss it.
You already said nice stuff about it.
No.
Try to sound intelligent here with Joshua Dan.
I'm Mr. G. We've got the wonderful guest, Caleb Femi.
Yes.
And Caleb, you wanted to talk about something today, didn't you?
I wanted to talk about a variety of things.
Yeah, because you were at Latitude Festival.
Yes, with Josh.
With Josh, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you guys find that?
To be honest, I think I realised that I'm too old for festivals.
Right.
Saturday, I was ready to go home. I was just tired. I was just genuinely tired. Like, yesterday, I sat in a park with my wife, just sat there. We had our own speaker, listening to our own music. And I was like, this is exactly what I want from festivals. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to go listen to music anymore. I used to be the person who used to be like, I want to go to festivals to go listen to music. I used to have lists.
Yeah.
Like, I knew who was performing at what time, and I'd bounce around. And now, I'm just like, nah, man. What's it called? Brainchild? I mean, I love my Brainchild. It was great. Mm-hmm. But I felt so old. Latitude, I felt old in my bones. I just felt like, why am I here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did you find the festival?
I don't understand festivals. I'm always lost when I'm there. I'm like, okay, what's going on? And I didn't grow up built to just
count
underground. And I mean, like, there's basic things that I just need, you know. I need to be able to moisturize. I need to be able to, like, not be around certain things. I feel like I've grown up enough to, like, I deserve some pampering.
I deserve. Yeah. Last time I was at Latitude, which was a very, very long time ago, and I haven't probably been booked since, right? So, like, I was working with Nike. And so they wanted me to do something at the Latitude Festival. So they booked me into a hotel. So I'm booked into a hotel and I'm arriving at the festival, niked up. Gums, bro. Gums, man. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Too many men. Yeah. Gums, right? And I'm just looking like the slickest shit alive, right? And I'm going in there and I'm chatting to like one dude and, yeah, oh, cool, man. Going to see, what I think I saw C6 Steve play or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm cool. And it was getting a little bit hot and then I was like, all right, then, man, I'll catch you guys later. Yeah. And then went back to the hotel, changed, fresh dressed, new garments, right? Come back out again a couple of hours later. And people are looking at me like, where's your tent? Where's your tent? And I was like, tent? I ain't doing no fucking tent.
Yeah, I have to say, this Latitude, I think, was my favorite performances of mine. I've had weird experiences at Latitude where I've not really felt like I was... You know when you feel like you're in connection with the crowd?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like where you feel like, okay, I've managed to kind of balance the preamble, the introduction, and the poetry.
Yeah, I've heard very good things about your performance. I heard that you really smacked it.
Yeah, I was, for me, this one was kind of like the one, you know, with both Benicity and my own performances, I felt, yeah, it, you know, generally, I think if you are starting as a spoken word and you need to perform at a festival, it really is Latitude and then Inglewood.
I've got to give props to Latitude because they have been on the poetry vibe from day one. I was at the first Latitude.
There's so much they can do better, I think.
Yeah, but considering that they first came on, what, 2006, I was at the first Latitude and they had a poetry tent from day one. Mm-hmm. All the other festivals then kind of jumped on the bandwagon thinking, oh shit, we need to get some spoken word in here. And before, you might be sandwiched in between a few bands or a few folk bands.
Literally between the two sounds.
Literally, yeah.
Literally,
you know, like sometimes you'd be performing and there's a big speaker behind you from some other event. So you're performing and there's some house beat playing behind you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh man.
Which is Dumbbox has heard that.
Okay, but let's get into, have you ever heard the thing that black people don't like festivals or black people don't like camping?
I'm not going to lie, I am part of that stereotype. I don't like camping.
I don't like it.
There's a Lego part of me that loves setting up a tent.
Yeah.
There's, you know, just...
What, that IKEA, love, Josh.
Just the IKEA. I mean, I'm a big IKEA nut. I like, if I go on an IKEA assembly unit and there's a piece missing, I will go insane. I will just be like, no, it can't be. I'm the kind of person who looks at puzzles and I go, I have to solve it. Yeah. I'm that kind of, you know, two pictures, find the difference. I will stay there for hours, literally circling tiny things that I think are different. So when it comes to tents, I'm like, I want to set it up. Yeah. I mean, I hate sleeping in them. Exactly. They're always fucking hot, and when you're inside, the rain sounds like a fucking hurricane.
See, I don't mind the camping. I don't mind none of that stuff, right? What I just don't like are those type of conversations, because, you know, there'll be very few black people at the festival. Mm-hmm. You'll be hanging around. Some what dude's going to get drunk and going to say to you, I'm not being racist, right?
Yeah.
But why aren't there many black people at festivals? I mean, I don't understand. You know, and you know, Josh knows me.
Yeah.
There's only so much diplomacy I've got in my life. I could be the nicest guy in the world, but you catch me on that wrong moment, I'm going to flood you with 400 years worth of shit, right?
I was called a monkey at my first festival.
That's what I'm saying. Stop
it
like that.
Lying to you. Some guy just picked me and my brother. It was me and my brother Musa. We all just stood there, and then some guy goes, oh my God, guys, do you mind if I take a picture? If I take a picture of you, you're like three little monkeys. And
That's what I'm saying.
I just looked at Roland, and Roland looked at me, and then because we had our punches and everything, and we just
It gets difficult. Yeah. So I said to this guy, saying to me, like, oh, come on, you know, don't give any black people at festivals. And I said, look, come on, bruv, be honest. If I was to ring up 1,000 people and bring them down here, you won't come to the next festival, man.
Yeah.
you won't be here next year, man. You'll be too many man, too many man.
You know what? That is actually
that's
very,
the
very
point.
True. If Latitude had the same proportion of black people in the UK,
get shut down. Yeah. And that's the annoying thing. That's one of my beefs, I suppose, with Lovebox, right? Is that, like, you know, they just start erecting these huge barriers, like a park where you normally go to and hang out. Because I remember all days in parks and stuff like that. And I remember, like I was saying to you guys before we started recording, the sound system days where a bunch of dudes just get huge speakers together.
Yeah.
Back in the days, you know those poet roads in Brixton, Shakespeare Road, Milton Road, whatever. People used to set up speakers in those roads up to the fucking top floor, right? Yeah. Speakers, and people hang out and they'd have like street parties and stuff like that. And it's free and people are cooking food and whatever. Mm. And that's what I call a natural organic festival. But the minute you start putting barriers and then it's like this person come in, this person go out. Mm-hmm. And then let's be honest, like I hate to sound racial, but all the security guys are black.
Mm-hmm.
All the people that go around picking up the litter are either black or Asian or East European, right?
So
it's almost this weird apartheid system occurring. All these revelers are there, and then all the people picking up after them immigrants.
None of you mentioned that. I just remember this weird thing that happened. The moment I landed at Latitude, right, I saw about a whole group of people wearing purple fluorescent shirts, and they were speaking in Polish.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it just freaked me out, because I'm just like,
cheap labor.
This is, you know, we're talking about heartland middle class festival in the heartland of England, and the people who are going to be going around picking up the dirt are from Eastern Europe. That just freaked me the fuck out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just a tiny little moment, because, you know, what you just mentioned,
when you sit back, and because when you're in there, people can say to you, hey man, this is free and this is organic and this is ethically sourced and blah blah this and blah blah that, and we're all, you know what I mean? But when you pull back, you just see the illusion for what it is. You just go, all right, then, you've cordoned off a part of the countryside, you've got internet access, you've got all of the amenities of the city there, but you've got a tent, and you know, a lot of people are now driving in caravans, right? And so you're not bushman living, do you know what I'm saying, right? Yeah. I got cousins that bathe in the river. I know what bushman living is. And so it's like this whole idea that, like, oh, we're going back to nature, but, you know, motherfucker, right? I'm gonna get back. You know what? This is what I hate about the English countryside.
Yeah.
This is what I absolutely hate about it. I used to do a lot of touring up and down the whole country. Yeah. You meet all these folks going, oh, you city guys, you're not used to the countryside and whatever. And I used to say to them, this ain't the countryside.
Yeah.
This is a well-manicured lawn. You ain't letting the grass grow up a couple of inches. There's, you know what I mean? No, you've got hedges. Left. It's not wild. It's not crazy. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying, right? You know, when you go to like Africa, South America, whatever, you can get killed by a tadpole dread. You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
That's wild. That's country. Do you know what I'm saying? That's bushman, right?
Mm.
Everything else is just varying degrees of a garden.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's well put. Well put. Man.
We can end it there. All right.
I'm available for all festivals, but I need that though.
So what about, I mean, So playing devil's advocate, because we're all three black men and we're having a full-on rail against the system. I think one of us has to pull back and play devil's advocate. And seeing as me, I tend to like festivals, at least in theory. So we've all argued that, you know, Latitude, the reason why they're not enough black people in Latitude is the lineup doesn't really correspond, which I completely agree with.
100%.
You know, it doesn't appeal to a lot of black people because, you know, they don't book a lot of black acts. Mm-hmm. It's in the country, you know, we have various ways that we need to take care of ourselves. Yeah. And my wife, she has naturally long hair, and even that, you know, when she wakes up and her hair is frazzled beyond belief, that's a problem. Much less if you have a weave, or if you have braids, or if you just decide to go all natural and it's not short.
So it's anti-weave crew.
We've got now. Wireless still has a very, very predominantly street urban black lineup. Wouldn't Wireless be argued as the counter to this whole kind of like we're not meant for the? In the fact that, you know, the first off, I think the most important, the lineup.
No.
Oh, shit. Help me out here. I didn't even look.
Wireless and Lovebox are slowly receding in the amount of...
Wasn't it like Stormzy and even more Stormzy?
Yeah, Stormzy was... They can't not have Stormzy.
It's too big.
Stormzy was on the main stage. He was the only one that was on the main stage. Kano wasn't on the main stage.
Wow, really? I thought Wireless was just main stage and fuck you. I thought it was just like main stage and then fuck you everyone else.
I've been on the fuck you stage.
You're on all the fuck you stage. Is Mr. G coming? Is there a fuck you stage?
Put him on it. That's my Oscar. That's my accolade.
It was just one main...
Yeah, and in comparison to the other festivals, Wireless still has like a high number of black people that do
So it doesn't have any tent in... It doesn't have any tents concerned with it. What then is the problem? I don't understand what the problem is now.
Well, the problem has been the problem has always been. They want the blackness without the black people. So I think what the mistake that they made was when they had it in Hyde Park, when Wireless used to be in Hyde Park, and they had so many black artists on the stage. And plus, Hyde Park is like a natural place for black people to go.
It's
to
a Mecca, isn't it? Yeah, we'll chat a bit about that later.
Yeah, so it was that easy. Everyone just strolled, everyone just bought tickets and just went. Obviously, with that, the policing increases to respond to
many men,
black people.
Too many men. There's not enough black. We need black and blue.
Yeah.
I remember there was the poet Tugstar. He had this beautiful phrase: "They want the urban without the burden."
Ooh. Essentially, And remember that the police do go around telling people we don't want black people at events. It's called the Form 696. You have to fill in who is the dominant demography of your crowd.
Because then your insurance goes up.
And also the police are allowed, they have the power to tell you, you can't have this on because you have too many black people.
I can rant on festivals all day long, right?
Ask anyone that owns a club.
I do a lot of work in prisons.
Yeah.
I'm faced with speaking to predominantly black men. And they're in there for a lot of like minor drug offences. Mm-hmm. And it freaks me out when you're standing there and you're dealing with people that are trapped in the system, might be repetitive for the rest of their lives, locked into poverty. And then you then go to a festival where you'll see open weed smoking, open cocaine taking, open ketamine pills, the whole nine. And I'm just thinking to myself, I've seen folks pulled up around the corner here, you know what I mean, for less than that. Yeah. That's the kind of thing where, as I said, when you pull back the lens and you see the inequality, you just go...
Speaking of inequality, when you came in, Caleb, you mentioned a certain incident which I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about.
Yeah, Hyde Park.
Yeah, they're video surfacing online of like whole huge crowds of like black people, young black people, and everyone's kicking off in Hyde Park and saying this and saying that. For me, the thing about it is that riot was hooliganism, was like, it was what it was. It's not unique to blackness.
Mm.
It happens with...
Football.
With football, it happens with rugby lads, it happens across the board, and it's something that is part of the human experience, it's part of human nature. And you can't then tell black people, okay, don't do this. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Because it's not something about being black. It's not about being black.
You can say don't do this, but it's got to be don't do this across the board.
Yeah, it's like when people say, blacks need to learn how to stop killing each other before anyone stops killing them. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, what about black and black crime? It's like that.
Rudy Giuliani.
So condemning these people with the same air as like, if they stop doing this, then it will...
Peace and love.
Peace and love, and it will transpire to our black struggle and improve it, is not a thing.
Yeah, I mean, first off,
I mean, ever since this whole Black Lives mm-hmm. Matter re-kicked off again, it's not that it re-kicked off, it's always been happening, but mm-hmm. you go back to public consciousness mm-hmm. and you hear of another shooting, mm-hmm. just like we heard of another shooting in Baton Rouge. And, mm-hmm. and there's a part of me that's just there going, please don't be black. Please don't be black. Don't be mm-hmm. Asian. Don't be some guy who went to yeah. Islam. Just be anybody else, Clark Kent.
Or Michael Douglas yeah, in Falling
it,
Down.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to be a black person who's like the last guy. He literally went on YouTube and he said, "I'm not affiliated with Black Lives Matter. I'm not Muslim. I'm none of that. I'm just a guy who hates cops and wants mm-hmm. to shoot some mans up, right?" And even then, that still got affiliated with Black Lives Matter. The first guy from the Dallas police officer, that mm-hmm. black person who they got up, he started blaming. Now you've got all of this, but this is my this is the point I'm trying to get to. Now, mm-hmm. I know the kind of stereotypes that black people mm-hmm. have to face every single time. When you recount this story, I was just like, please let it just be a bipartisan, multicultural melting pot of a riot. Yeah. Let it not be a gaggle of black boys.
Josh wants a United Colours of Benetton riot.
I swear, I want a fucking G7 council riot. Yeah.
You're trying to apply logic to riots.
I know! Yeah. You can't. I know! This is why it hurts!
You can't. Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta be a thugged out soldier. Here's an interesting point which I want to relate to both of you, right?
Yeah.
Here's a narrative that has not been discussed.
Yeah.
The shootings in Dallas mm-hmm. and the shootings in Baton Rouge
yeah.
have been by ex-army personnel. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I don't like getting all fucking celebrity on this shit, right? But I used to work on the Russell Brand show and the show got cancelled mm-hmm. due to this whole Saxgate thing. Mm-hmm. And I was inundated by newspapers offering obscene amounts of money for an exclusive. I remember I put out a poem called Apologies in Order. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying something like, we'll apologize for schoolboy attacks, but who apologizes for invading Iraq? And I started talking about what happens to unemployed soldiers once mm-hmm. they come back from the war. Mm-hmm. And I sent that out to all the people that wanted me to give a statement. I sent it out to all of them and none of them published it. Because when soldiers go out to war, mm-hmm. motherfuckers love them, right? When they get shot, they come back and we all salute and have a parade and we all dip our hats and everything and we love the soldiers. When they're out on fucking crack, homeless, can't get a job, beating their wives, beating their kids, you know what I mean, going crazy because God knows what fucking super serum drugs have been placed in them to get them to fight and kill another man all the time, nobody fucking gives a fuck, right? And it's almost like it's a replay of Vietnam, mm-hmm. where when you look at documentaries about the Black Panthers and you mm-hmm. see like some of the Panthers that got involved in violent exchange mm-hmm. with the police, a lot of them that served in Vietnam. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so haven't you found it interesting that the narrative of the Marine aspect of their lives mm-hmm. is getting downplayed, but the narrative of the Black nationalist narrative of their lives is getting promoted?
I don't know. It's not interesting. It's just the way
it's Madonna. I think it's the Madonna Hall conundrum, but just for black people.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you
just
know.
Just how it is. It's almost
good,
like,
you're a good Negro if you're fighting for us, but the moment you kill us, you're a Negro. You're just a Negro. We forget the good bit, of course. That makes perfect sense.
I think that's like 101. The first time you walk into your first journalism lesson, that's the first thing you learn.
Class for today. Suppress all.
I think as artists, as all three of us are artists, what are we going to do to counter this?
Okay, so they did that. It was stupid, and they are stupid, just like the rugby lads who are stupid, just like the football lads who are stupid, etc.
But you went to the Black Lives Matter march recently.
Yes, I did.
Right?
Yeah.
When you went there, was there any fear that there would be some kind of violent reaction either from the participants or some provocation from the police?
No, the police, they would not have dared to do it in such a valuable area as Oxford Circus.
Interesting. Good
moves.
Yeah, everybody was watching. Tourists were filming us. They literally let us do what we wanted
to do. And also, you guys had, it was quite a small number. It was about hundreds.
They split it. There was thousands of us. And then they did this fantastic move, which they must have practiced like thousands of times to pull it off.
Thousands of years ago.
Because they split the crowd. Then it was split into hundreds. But they did it in such a smooth way that the people at the front, I was in the front segment, and by the time I looked behind, we were like, where's everyone else? And they were somewhere else. They did it so smoothly. It was brilliant. That was the only thing that was like, whoa, don't, because we'll kick off here. And then they were like, okay, sorry, just continue.
It's like Ketlin, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you feel the march achieved?
I think the march achieved awareness. the march is not a solution and it's not a first step in actual tangible action. The march allowed us to collectively mourn, collectively grieve, be angry in a contained way and get that initial exhale out and let people know we are around. Do you know what I mean? Let them see that, oh, there are actually a lot of black people in London, etc., etc. And also, what it didn't do and what I was hoping it did was to educate people the fact that black and black crime is not something that is a solution. We need to not bring that into this.
It's not an equal question.
Yeah, we need to stop selling drugs and stop killing each other. And
pull up hands up.
Yeah.
Pull up hands up, man.
Exactly, which a few people were saying on when they gave the thing. And also, we have our own problem with police brutality and
it's UK based.
In UK, we have huge, but people think it's
so here's a question. America. Here's a question for you. Say the last high profile case I can think of was Smiley Culture, where the police raided his place and supposedly he pulled out a knife and stabbed himself in the chest. As these things happen, right?
Yeah.
But
how was that the last high profile?
No.
Oh, your last.
I'm talking about the UK.
No. Last high profile was probably the most recent one, but okay, before that, Mark Duggan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, cool. So that was, I think, a brilliant way we can kind of wrap this up. I feel like, yes, you know, we're living in interesting times. And in interesting times, you know, this is all like a game, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And we just have to play it right. And this is just a start. And I think that leads on very, very inelegantly to my choice.
Which is going
to
be inelegant.
Which is going to be inelegant. It's going to be as inelegant as fuck.
Yeah.
In the Death Grips, Lord of the Game featuring...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Finally. Josh is coming out.
I'm so glad
that your anger's being focused. That's what I'm glad about. Because you've got the potential, right? You're like the Darth Vader.
I know. I'm the Emperor.
I'm right?
Luke Skywalker.
Right? You ain't Luke Skywalker, right? No. You're Darth Vader, and I can see
you're
it in
I'm
you.
Saying I'm going to kill kids.
Eventually, you've got to kill me.
I'm going to lightsaber my kids.
Eventually, you've got to kill me, And eventually Caleb's got to kill both of us, man. Caleb, Luke.
All right, try to sign a tangent with Star Wars.
Caleb's going
to
be an old man just saying, there used to be these guys.
For those of you, we're literally talking about Star Wars 4, 5, and 6. And that's very good because this is the section where we talk about the art that we have seen in the last week. This is Trying to Sound Intelligent. I'm Joshua Dehan.
And I'm Mr. G.
I'm Caleb Fenn.
And I'm going to start with what I saw. And this is something that was highlighted. Mr. G insisted I watch this, and I watched it.
Oh, yes.
And I have to agree for once that he was absolutely spot on in most of the things he said about this. Goodbye Uncle Tom, or Farewell Uncle Tom, as it's also called, is an Italian film in the mondo core genre, which is a mockumentary that essentially show depravity and aim to shock people. The idea was a group of Italian filmmakers had gone back in time to slavery at its peak to film them. And I have to agree with Mr. G, like, it is the gold standard.
It's the harshest slave movie you'll ever see.
Do you know what? Yeah. See, this film is... This film has been kind of the best, worst film I have seen. For the same reason why you could argue that Invasion of the Body Snatchers is both pro-communism and, and anti-communism at the same time. See, the film shows kind of the depravity of slavery. And I mean the depravity. It starts with a bunch of aristocrats, you know, rich people, feeding black slaves underneath their table with chicken bones. Like... Trust me, as bad as you think it is me describing it, it is worse. It is so worse, and it doesn't let up. It goes on and on and on. When you're watching it, you can tell that they're satirizing and they're trying to show what was bad and how barefaced these people were about it, even how they managed to accept it. But at the same time, when you read how this film was made, how they went to Haiti and they got Papa Doc to, you know, get a whole bunch of extras. And you know, because they have thousands and thousands of people all acting like slaves, all being mistreated, all being forced into various states of depravity.
It's got castration. And it's got rape.
It's got forced bathing. It's got scrubbing. It's got, you know, it shows mutilation.
It shows slaves shitting on themselves in the slave ship.
Humiliation on a massive scale. And you realize that at some point...
Doing it.
Yeah. Oh my God, you have no idea how bad this film is.
This goes back to a previous conversation where Josh was saying...
Let me finish my point. Let me finish my point. Because my point is that you're seeing all of this in massive scale and you realise, while you're watching this, you're going, oh my God, how depraved is that? You realise at some point, someone told these thousands of people, cut.
Yeah.
That was a good shot. And you know they didn't get paid no fucking artist wages. So you're witnessing exploitation in a...
multiple levels.
An exploitation on a realistic scale. And I went to the, what's it called, Wikipedia, and I read everything about this. And I was like, I can't disagree with anybody who said this was racist. I can't disagree with anyone who watched this and were unable to sort of disconnect themselves from the fact. When you're watching a documentary and you're seeing someone maybe filming a child hungry, you go, oh my God, that's sad. But also, this man just stood there and watched this child die of hunger. It was that level.
No, because the thing is that, like, I always generally say that I don't like slave movies because I've seen the ultimate slave movie. And the thing is, when you see this movie...
And I disagreed like a fool.
When you see this movie, you realise that in order to shoot this movie, you have to reenact the horrors of slavery. Much in the same way that, like, if I was going to shoot a movie about a violent rape, to make it as realistic as possible, as Josh said, you're going to have to go, scene one, rape. Cut, scene two,
irreversible. Irreversible,
cut,
so to speak.
So in order to actually highlight the exploitation, you have to partake in the exploitation. And that's why I just, once I saw that film, because it was like an uncle of mine that showed me that film, that film shown in the Caribbean like all day long. And he showed me that film. When I saw it, I was like, that's it. I don't need to see another slave movie again. It's
really. It is.
There's even a guy that talks about how you can get different shades of black, and he goes, you can mix Indian with a little bit of
African with a little bit of white, and it's a science, and
this is the thing that's so horrifying about the film is that most of the dialogue comes from actual slave masters' narratives written hundreds of years
ago. They're like, no, we literally this is not stuff written as a script. You go see where someone is laughing about a man getting castrated, and the man's like, oh, but, you know, what about the pain? And the woman's like, ha, 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 come on, they are black, they don't feel any pain. And you know that people actually say this. It starts out with the woman who wrote the Uncle Tom's Cabin having a little speech
What about the ending, though?
The ending. You told me I will enjoy the end. I didn't like the end that much. Right. Do you know why? You know why I didn't like the end? So the end, right? The end talks about, basically, the end is, they show this preacher in modern day. He's reading the book,
The Confessions of Nat Turner.
And it's talking about Nat Turner. And it was talking about Nat Turner and how Nat Turner rebelled, which is going to be the film that is being made, Birth of a Nation, by Nat Parker.
Yeah.
And it then shows a group of modern day black nationalists going into a house, a white person's house, and essentially slaughtering them. Now, here's my problem with that, right? You have shown me black extras being treated like shit for ages. And then finally, when you're talking about the one time about black rebellion, you show me very, very nice white people all lying in the bed and they all get slaughtered and it all kind of happens off screen. There's this point where someone gets battered and and it's all just kind of like very nicely done. And the worst part was, right, you've seen them maltreat black babies over and over again. You saw scenes where clearly they found someone who gave birth to a freshly born black baby and they put it in the scene and they covered it in mud and it's all very, very inhumane. And there's a scene where a black nationalist grabs a white baby off the crib and smashes against the wall. They used a doll. And I'm looking at that, and I'm just like, you've given me 2 hours. 2 hours. And this is what you're using
here's,
to kind of...
Here's my question to you, Josh, right? Now that you've seen it, do you feel happy now?
Me?
Right?
No.
No, because you were saying, he was before saying, I need to see representation. I need to see the real. Now you've seen the real. See, are you happy?
You know what? I'm not happy. I'll tell you why I'm not happy. I'm not happy.
Oh, well, we need to get a fucking DeLorean and take you back into time so you can witness it firsthand. No.
I'm happy for the same reason. I'm never happy when white people decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a film that shows the brevity of slavery. Full thing. You know, I'm going to do it. And then somebody else goes, oh, wow, why do it? I'm so happy you're going to do it. Here's some money. And then he goes up to Hafey and he's like, I've got all this money, but I don't want to share all these extras. Can you guys do it for free? No. If they told me Oprah Winfrey did it, I would have been fucking happy. Because
same
Oprah
film. The same film.
See, that's the thing. Oprah wouldn't have made the same film. You know why? Oprah, she might have made a film that would have hit us as hard. And trust me, this film...
I don't think any film can hit you that hard.
See, the film is intense, but the reason why the film doesn't work as a whole film, because the film is
There's no characters.
How?
But there you go. Slavery is just one atrocity after another.
See, that's bullshit.
He wants a Superman character.
The man made a shock documentary. He made a shock documentary in a genre at a time where Italians were all making little shock documentaries where they shock people out, right?
Snuff movies in all but name.
That's what he aimed to do. That's what he tried to do. And he had slavery. And he thought, okay, great. I'm going to fucking exploit all these people. And I've got this historical context I can tie about it. And that's what happens when someone who's not involved and doesn't have the emotional baggage that, or the emotional responsibility or the historical responsibility towards the art. And this is what I'm saying. When white people decide to make films about slavery, why it's always problematic for me. Because I know for a fact that even if a black person, even if me and you, Kelly, Femi, me and you just sat down and said, all right, you know what? Let's write a fucking slave poem. Let's research. You know, at the back of our heads, we're telling ourselves we need to write a poem that if our mom is in the crowd, she'll hear that poem, she'll cry, she'll shake her hand and tell us that. But a white person doesn't have that problem. He's just thinking, let me think of the worst thing I can say. Yeah. I'll just write it down.
I can then argue, right, that you would actually write something that has elements of humanity in it. I can then argue that you're not going into the depth of the slave master's mind. You're not going into the actual crux of the matter. You can't appreciate the level of exploitation, the level of treatment of one person over another. You can't access that because they access that in that film. And I don't know any black person can make a film like that.
For me, that's the problem. With whiteness, though, it always has to be the shocking aspect of it is always like, does it actually do have the intended?
But Josh wanted to be shocked.
No, I didn't want to be shocked. I wanted to see the horrors. I wanted to see the horrors with narrative. Okay. Nobody's watching. Josh wants his money back. Nobody's watching. I didn't spend any money on it. It's free on YouTube. Nobody's watching. What's it called? Schindler's List. And they're going, oh, but what about the Nazis? How do they feel about this? No, I mean, it's terrible scene. Nobody watches Son of Saul and seeing that fucking seeing those Jewish people having to pick up the bodies of the recently gassed relatives that they had and thinking, my God, what did the Nazi soldiers feel about this? I don't know about their mindset. Fuck their mindsets, man.
But the thing for those movies, that it's for white, is for people, white people, to process their guilt in a safe space. That's all.
Thank you.
That's.
I don't think that movie's for that.
No. Oh no, it is.
No, it is.
It was designed for the shock market. It was designed for the shock market. Don't lie to yourself. They made a film before that, Mondo Core, right? That was all about going around the world and filming all of these fucking foreigners doing, you know, their little tribalistic things and going, oh, how terrible is this? These guys, they came back to the genre. Everybody else had done genre because that's what happens in Hollywood. The moment someone lands on it and it works, everybody else does it. So they're thinking, shit, we need to come back. We need to come with something harder. So they went slavery, right? And the reason why it doesn't have a narrative, if you had a narrative, then yes, then you could say, okay, crap, oh my God, this is someone actually trying to get white people to see what they were doing. But no, scene after scene after scene after scene.
There's no film that's going to please him.
But there's no film that can ever have that effect.
That's my argument.
Do you know what I mean?
You can't capture it.
It's
too
therapy
much
for them. They'll sit down and they'll watch it and they'll feel really bad. And that then makes everything okay. They've done their penance. So now I can go out and live the world guilt-free because I've just had to sit through 2 hours of feeling bad. Do you know what I mean? Right. At the end of the day, it doesn't affect the infrastructure of racism. It doesn't affect the system. It doesn't affect their white privilege.
That's how I feel about slavery. That is what he said is how I feel about slavery movies.
All right, so he agrees with both of us. Yeah. What have you seen?
Okay, I saw Khalees yesterday.
Khalees.
Yeah, and that was sick.
I had a friend support Khalees.
Ain't she doing? Yeah, she's doing cookery now, isn't she?
Yeah, she's doing cookery, but she also did a show at the Jazz Cafe. Was it yesterday or Monday? It was Monday. Yeah.
I saw my friend supported her on Saturday. Actually, she literally went from Benin City's gig on Friday and then traveled the next day. Yeah. Got there and performed Saturday. Apparently, it was very good.
Yeah, she's actually surprisingly good. She's.
Why do you say surprising?
For some reason, I felt, and this is down to my
preconception.
Because I was more on the Nas.
Wow, that's very telling.
Interesting.
Fresh meat.
The thing is, when I was a young boy, the only thing I knew about Khalees was the songs that she made that were like that hit the mainstream.
Yeah, so like Milkshake, like Caught Out There.
Trick Me, all of that. So when I went there, the first song she did was like a shade to Nas. It was about that period of time where it was all turmoil. So I just thought, oh, here we go.
Right.
It's just going to be like an hour of this. And then that was it. And she didn't even mention his name. She was just like, and she just moved on. She did the song. She was like, oh, it's weird how you do a song like this and everyone knows what it's about.
Yeah.
But they don't know the moment you were writing and what you were going through, but they know what it's about. And that was it. And she moved
on. That's good though, because it's good that she doesn't want to be just defined by her relationship with Nas.
Yeah.
She's more than that. She's also Pharrell's ex-girlfriend.
You can't just keep associating a woman with
that's why
when you say Superman-y, X-Man-y to describe women, it irks me.
I said X-Men-y. Yeah. There you go.
It was a strong performance. She kept us there. There wasn't any bum notes. She was smooth with her vocals. Her band was on point. And at the end, she gave an 18-year-old who was working for her an opportunity to sing a song.
Oh, wow.
She was like, you're 18. When I was 18, someone gave me my opportunity, so come and sing. And we thought, oh, we have to pretend that we like this guy. But he was actually good.
Yeah.
So everything went well. And I was like, Khalees, you are amazing.
Anything that was, we used to call it the kiss the badge moment, where she does something that is like specific to London or specific to the moment.
Is anyone from East London?
No, she didn't.
North London?
Nope.
All right, South London over here.
I'm so glad she didn't do that. She just...
You would have shouted though. You're South though, aren't you?
No, I never shout.
You do shout.
I never shout.
You ain't from South if you don't shout, man.
Don't lie.
Why are you lying? You shout.
If they say if they're anyone from Peckham, then I'll shout.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're that specific.
Yeah, because South is... Do you know what? South is huge, man. And if you grew up in South, you know that you don't just say South. You're either southeast or you're southwest.
One time, right, I was going to a wedding in Barbados.
Yeah. Did this say south?
So I was, you know, when you get so stressed out with London, like you just think, I just can't take this shit anymore. There's too many people. There's too much bullshit. I just need to get away. And I was so happy when my friend was getting married in Barbados. I thought, right, I can just get the fuck away from everybody. And I rented out this beach house and I was just lying there, relaxing in my bed, and you know, it's hot and there's little sand flies everywhere, and I'm just like just trying to cool down. I've had a nice cold glass of lemonade, everything's cool. I'm getting ready to go to a party later on in St. Lawrence Gap, And then I just heard the South in the house, yeah. And my neighbours were these Croydon crew, right?
Yeah.
And they just brought Croydon. They brought the whole of Croydon in all its beauty and ugliness and mentality and noise. And they were just, and once they realised I was from London, they kept on knocking on my door. And I was like, I don't think you understand. Yeah. I came here to get away from you, motherfucker. Yeah. You know what I'm saying, right? And they, were doing press ups and just all that type of shit.
So
you know, flexing their muscles, all that type of shit.
What have you seen?
What have I seen? I went to a night at Rich Mix. It was put on by the journalist Gary Young.
Oh yeah, Black Words Matter.
Yeah, Black Words Matter, and he was giving a speech about, I suppose, his journey into journalism. So he was actually saying about how if he wasn't given a chance by certain bursaries and certain grants, then he would never have been able to become a journalist.
Well, couldn't he build his own?
What?
Couldn't he have just built his own, started his own newspaper?
No, it doesn't work like that.
Doesn't work like that? Are you sure? Are you sure, Mr. G?
We can go down this line of argument again, and I can state the same thing. It's about being proud in yourself. I will always go back to saying, if I let someone else control my pride, then I may as well star in a fucking Italian movie and be a slave. I may as well do that, right? Anyway, what he was saying was that he was talking about his journey into journalism, and he was reporting about deaths in Dallas. Not the police deaths, but the black deaths in Dallas. And he was talking about the story of one of the boys that got shot within a black neighborhood. And he was surprised about how many, again, it's exactly what you said, Caleb, right? That the journalists have their own agenda and their own story. And so if it's gang related, wow, that's a story. If it's to do with a death that's occurred at a protest, then that's a story. But the idea of a kid just getting shot on the block isn't interesting to anybody. And so he decided to talk to the boy's family, the boy's mother and the grandmother, and found out the circumstances of how this boy died. And literally it was a case where the mother used to be in a middle class neighborhood, and she was working, and then she got into an accident, which meant that she couldn't work, and then her disability benefit ran out, and then she had to move to a poorer neighborhood, which is where the likelihood of getting shot is increased. And so she was trying to raise her son up in those circumstances. And he was actually saying that it's more a story of how in America, or I guess in the world, even if you are supposedly middle class, you are two paychecks away from the breadline. You know, you cut off two paychecks, a lot of people's world falls apart. And he just told this like fascinating story. So when it gets to the actual point of the boy being shot, you're almost in tears because you're just realizing, oh my God, this is like, it's like an economic pressuring to push you into a neighborhood where it is like a war zone. And so the statistics of death in this neighborhood compared to like a square foot in Iraq is almost the same in terms of death. So being in that neighborhood is like being in a war zone. And he was just, he used all of his journalistic and interrogative mind to present this story, which would have just been two lines in a newspaper, like maybe an obituary, not even that. And he was just saying about like how you've got to be able to tell your own stories and present them in your own light, because what you deem to be important is dictated to you from someone else. And yeah, it was very, 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 wow. It was just like, it's one of those moments where everybody was hot in there, you know, fans were going, but it's one of those moments where I just thought, you know, I've really learned something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad it seems everybody here went to things that where they learned something positive and they learned how to really embrace things that, you know, they weren't really sure about before and they felt like they gained something, whereas I just gained memories. I wish I
and that's why
you can't.
This has been Trying to Sound Intelligent.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm Mr. G.
I'm Joshua.
And we've had the amazing guest,
Caleb Femi.
And I think we're gonna end. I've actually tried so hard not to flood this podcast with Ice Cube tunes because I love Ice Cube so much, right? But I think that today is the day that I'm gonna drop a tune, because this is the moment, this is the time.
It's that hot.
I'm gonna drop the tune that just blew me away when I was a teenager.
Go on,
it's called Endangered Species, Ice Cube and Chuck D.
Alright, cool, cheers.
Tonight, there's been a new animal aimed in the direction of falling off the face of the earth. Yes, young black teenagers are recorded to be the oldest and the newest creatures added to the endangered species list. As of now, the government has not made steps to preserve the blacks. When asked why, a top law official adds, because they make good game.
A young nigga got it back for the brown. Peace! Don't make me laugh. All I hear is motherfuckers rockin' sucker tags. Living large, telling me to get out the gang. I'm a nigga, gotta live by the trigger. How the fuck do you figure that I can say peace and the gunshots won't cease? Every cop killer goes ignored. They're just sending another nigga to the morgue. A boy point scored. They can give a fuck about us. They'd rather catch us with guns and white powder. If I was old, they'd probably be friendly. Me. Since I'm young, they consider me the enemy. They'll kill 10 of me to get the job correct. To serve, protect, and break a nigga's neck. Cause I'm the one with a trunk of funk. And fuck the police in the tape deck. You should listen to me, cause there's more to see. Call my neighborhood a ghetto, cause the house is minorities. The other color don't know, you can rub it, I hide. These are tales from the dark side. All of us are in danger, damn!
Run, 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 the ass up, they cannot hide. Get cute, they can't fuck with the dog.